Welcome back to the Frontier of Finance. I'm your host, James Rockwood, joined by Rob Cernkovic and John Hadwin, who's a portfolio manager for financials and global equity at BMO Global Asset Management. Welcome to the Frontier, John.
Thanks for having me.
Really excited about the topic today. I think it's relevant to everybody in the room here. Earlier this year, we saw the biggest financial crisis in the U.S. since 2008. Silicon Valley Bank, a respected regional bank, collapsed in a matter of days or even felt like minutes. I think a lot of people are familiar with the headlines around that. But for those who aren't, John, could you just give us a quick overview of the SVB collapse?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite the tragedy because it has been a terrific bank historically. Over 10 years, they grew book value per share from about $40 a share to $200. I mean, that's about as good as it gets in banks. And that's what creates the value, is the tangible book value growth and the dividends. But so a terrific bank. And they just had so much growth through 20 and 21 that they ended up in a bad spot with the big move up in interest rates. Take a step back, the whole industry, when everyone was stuck at home, unable to spend money, and then you had the government stimulus and everything, deposits started piling up. So you had the U.S. banking system grew deposits by about $3.5 trillion, and loan demand was moderate, so only about $1.5 trillion of that went into loans. So the banks ended up with $2 trillion that they had to put into securities. Not high-risk securities, mostly treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. But when they were doing this, rates were pretty low. So these securities that they purchased, once rates moved up, on average, those securities were down in value by 15%. So that $2 trillion that the industry put into mortgage-backed securities and treasuries, down 15%, that's about a $300 billion hit. Split amongst the banks. And unfortunately, Silicon Valley had a good piece of that because they grew deposits a lot faster than your average bank through the crisis.
And so was it simply just that were they more exposed than others to that 15% dip? Or why was it them specifically who failed versus any of the other banks who were in a similar situation?
Yeah, basically, whoever had the fastest growth when everyone was stuck at home, they're the ones that put the most of that deposit growth into securities. And then the Fed took rates up dramatically from a historical perspective. So there's no criminal behavior or anything here. It was a great bank. Management was running a good bank for the most part. They should have done more on the risk management, obviously. They were a little bit overconfident in the deposit growth because that, of course, shut down even prior to the deposit run, just because the venture capital flows were on hold for a period. So quite the tragedy. And the worst thing is, it was quite fixable if the social media talk and the hedge funds hadn't encouraged the bank run. Because, on March 8th, I remember that because it's anniversary day, the wife and myself.
I had mine last night.
Congrats.
Thanks.
Love
you, Danielle.
There was a Wednesday evening, March 8th, they made a press release that they were going to raise $1.8 billion because they'd taken a $1.8 billion loss on their securities portfolio to restructure it, because shareholders had been disappointed with the duration of the low yield securities portfolio they had. So they were taking action to do something about that. They were going to raise $2 billion to offset the loss. They made that announcement the Wednesday night. Conference call wasn't until Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. I listened to that call. It was all fine. That morning, analysts were taking their earnings estimates down a little bit, but nothing dramatic. Most of the sell side and the long-only investors were just debating, whether that equity issue gets priced at 170 per share or 200. But by the time that conference call started, the stock was down 35%. And things got worse throughout the day because of the drama in social media, just talking, spreading that news. You got to get out of the bank. It's going under. If the depositors had ignored that and left the deposits there, the $2 billion would have been raised, and the bank would be doing a, you know, would be a really hot stock today with all this talk about, well, actually, strong conviction in AI taking off and everything else. So just a tragedy, I think, really.
So you were on like a regular or relatively mundane conference call in an absolute, like that call was happening in a vacuum and there wasn't the social media going on. You kind of saw there wasn't really anything during that conference call you saw it would be particularly out of scope of a regular call.
The underwater securities portfolio, investors had known about that for quite a while. That was already reflected in earnings estimates. Because if you have a lot of securities with low yields and you know their deposit rates are going up a little bit, you know they're going to get hit on the net interest income. So earnings estimates were coming down, but the bank was still very viable. And what nobody has mentioned, like some, in theory, you could say they have to mark their full 100 billion of securities to market, and that would have cost them 15 billion pre-tax, 12 billion after tax, when they only had 12 billion in equity. So that's terrible. But if you recognize all those losses, you get to reinvest, and you get more equity from shareholders, you get to reinvest those proceeds at 4% right, instead of 2%. So you don't have to. They didn't need to do the equity raise on the full amount because you don't have to mark all your securities to market. There's no difference between having a mortgage or a mortgage-backed security other than one trades in the market, one doesn't. If this had all been individual mortgages, there wouldn't have been any mark-to-market loss or anything, and none of this would have happened either.
So when did you first start hearing trouble? You know, you hear the call coming up. Is there trouble ahead of time? When did you start to get a sense that, okay, there could be something bigger than this sort of relatively regular call?
Well, this had been weighing on the stock for a while. In 21, the market value of the company was about 20 billion above tangible equity, and it was down to about 6 billion above tangible equity, something along that line, because investors had priced in, you know, this earnings headwind from having this low yield and high duration securities portfolio. But it was something the bank would work through. It would have been one of the more defensive names if we go into a recession and interest rates come down, those security losses would have went away. So it was all manageable. The biggest problem wasn't the securities portfolio, it was the panic in the depositor base.
So if it was a known issue and people were pricing it in, why wait till there started to be panic to mitigate the issue?
Yeah, they should have done it sooner. I mean, in January, they provided guidance for the deposit base being around 175 billion at the end of Q1. And on the day they announced the securities hit, they said deposits were coming in around 165 billion. So not that dramatic, right? They were disappointing by 3 or 4%.
Yep.
And that's why initially the analysts were just taking their estimates down, do a regular equity raise. I mean, it's quite normal to recap banks when they get in trouble. In the old days, it was really worth recapping them because when they get into trouble, you fix them up and they could trade at 2x book again. Nowadays, the bank valuations are much more depressed and there's less upside when you do recap a bank. So that is a headwind for them, but... And they should have got done this sooner. The way they did the transaction was poorly timed, with Silvergate announcing that they were going to run things off just a week or two prior. That really made everyone nervous within Silicon Valley, and that just added to the bad timing on this.
I know it's been a few months since the collapse. Can we just walk back through the timeline of sort of the conference call to the full sort of collapse of the bank? I think that'll be good for listeners just to think about the very, very short amount of time between that discussion and
so the, like the news that they were going to restructure the part of the securities portfolio and do the equity raise. That was a Wednesday night. Conference call was Thursday morning at 10 our time, so it would have been earlier out in California. And at 10 a.m. the stock was down 35. So the stock on the Wednesday was 260 a share. Conference call down 35%, end of day down 105, and didn't trade the next day.
Wow.
So pretty crazy.
I remember.
And of course, that brought on Signature Bank over the weekend, because a third of their business was crypto bank.
Mm-hmm.
So guilt by association there in regards to Silvergate actually did a good job. They didn't go into FDIC protection. They just had the issue where FTX was one of their clients. Elizabeth Warren says she's going to go after them, and that scares their client base away. So they actually didn't have any securities portfolio issues. They were able to run down the bank in a nice, efficient way. I don't think there's been any losses there, but I haven't followed it that closely.
Yeah, I remember it too, like from a technology company perspective, so many people in our network and whether it's venture firms or other startup founders were really panicked. And when you didn't know what was going to happen to the depositors, I remember just being kind of sheer terror. I read somewhere that somebody said it would be an extinction level event for small software companies because of these firms had money that was just evaporating for the simple, you know, risk that they had it sitting in a bank. If I think back through that, it didn't have that same sort of catastrophic outcome because ultimately depositors were made whole and were protected. But I think now when you consider the collapse, the social media, all the communication around it, how immediately people can get information today, do you think that poses the same sort of risk for banks? And do you see this as the end of the specialist bank or a firm that has, because you consider it like a standard bank, a large wirehouse or top five bank, they've got so many different lines of business with exposures to so many different industries. You've got consumers, commercial, within there, there's different industries in that. You have different products out to people. Like for that whole stakeholder group to go to a JPMC or one of these really large financial institutions and do a true run on it, you'd have to have so many different things going wrong. That the risk of the run is probably not the biggest risk going on anyway. What do you think of that? Because you look further, you've got, you know, First Republic. It seemed like there's groups who had a lot of specialization or banks a lot of specialization, a particular concentration to an industry, have a way different risk to a run than many other institutions.
Yeah, that'll be a big debate for a while now, given what happened. Silicon Valley was very unique because the depositors were mostly the venture capital community and all that very tight-knit. But it's a good example of what could play out in a situation where there really was a problem. It wasn't any problem here other than the fact that the hedge funds were encouraging people to panic and that type of thing. And that's what's playing out at some of the smaller banks as well. It's basically bullying, scare away the depositors, the hedge funds make a buck. And if you're a depositor, you read some scary news, there's no upside for you to stay there, right? Like you want to be loyal to the bank if they've provided you good services over the year, but that doesn't compensate you for the risk if you're scared. So something that's unfortunately tough to deal with. I don't think there'll be a short ban. So unless they throw someone in jail for making a buck from encouraging a bank run, we got to watch out for this when we're buying some of the smaller banks in the portfolio on that. But definitely you want your banks to be more diversified by client type. And really, maybe wholesale funding is not so bad. It's one thing the regional banks, they're going to have to for regulations, so that when a bank gets in trouble, that they have some debt funding where those debt holders and bond holders can feel some pain before the FDIC has to bail it out. So that'll all play a role in how we move forward here.
Will we see another bank grow as fast as SVB did over that period? Or is that potentially like a red flag if you see a bank grow to that?
Yeah, I mean, that was very, very unique times. There was just so much money flowing into venture capital when rates were zero. I don't think that'll happen again in my lifetime. It'd have to be a completely different situation. But it is tough to manage growth as a financial. And First Republic as well, right? I actually was never a fan of First Republic because they always had the fastest growth, but they were running amongst the lowest return on assets in the industry for a long time. They'd only produce typically 10 to 12% ROE. you're only doing 10 or 12% ROE, you can't really grow your assets much more than 10 or 12% without coming to the market for more equity all the time. But that's what they did successfully. They'd come to the market, even though their profitability wasn't any better than Citigroup's, for instance. The market would keep giving them money at a high valuation, and that supported their story. And they just wanted to grow quality clients at low returns, and then they had a lot of growth through 20 and 21 as well. And that backfired because they put a lot of mortgages on the balance sheet at low yields, and they were overpaying for their deposits and that. That's again why it wasn't fixable. They just dug too much of a hole. Again, because rates moved so dramatically. That's another thing that doesn't happen too often, where you get the Fed raising 500 beeps in such a short period. So very unique circumstances, which caused, I don't even think it's a crisis, because the industry did more than 15% return on tangible equity in Q1 here, record revenues. So we've got a very healthy industry with a handful of mess ups. And then adding on to that is the hedge funds trying to make a buck.
So John, what about contagion? I've heard a lot about that. I'm not exactly sure what, maybe you can explain what it means, and then let me know if that's something that's in effect or happening right now with the banks.
Yeah, and it's happening in the stock market with how people are valuing banks, but contagion in regards to one bank bringing down another, that happened back in the financial crisis because banks would have loans out to other banks and deposits with other banks, a lot of so when one bank got in trouble, that would create problems for the other bank. With all the regulatory changes, that's really been cut back on because it's punitive for the banks on the capital calculations and that type of thing. So this time it's more a coincidence than contagion.
And so does that mean that Credit Suisse and the situation with Credit Suisse, really didn't have a lot to do with the situation at SVB?
Yeah, that was unique. Credit Suisse has been having troubles for years. They raised $4 billion back in November to try and shore up their balance sheet. But their business plan was just to get to 6% ROE in like 25 or 26, which, that's not covering their cost of capital. The regulators gave them some time, but clients were starting to give up on them and move their money elsewhere. That was picking up speed given the drama in the U.S., but the problem that Credit Suisse had has been baking for quite a long time.
And then they were obviously ingested into UBS, slightly against, I guess, UBS's will. Do you want to talk a little bit through kind of what happened to them?
Yeah, I mean, I thought back in the first financial crisis they should put CS and UBS together. Problem with that is you have one larger bank, it's more of a systematic risk for the Swiss country, given the size of that bank combined. But if they could make one more resilient franchise, then it does reduce the risk to the country that way. So UBS didn't want to take Credit Suisse in this case. Now that Switzerland has all their eggs in one basket, they had to make sure it's going to be a good transaction for UBS. And that's why the Credit Suisse AT1 bondholders were written off, which created, I forget the number, 17 billion or 20 billion in capital that UBS can use to mark down some of those assets that are coming from Credit Suisse.
Do you think that with UBS ingesting a institution that's had a long history of problems with Credit Suisse, that it will now go under a higher level of scrutiny like an SVB, because of the fact that they've had to absorb this underperforming organization? Like, how do you think that UBS is going to perform long-term? Obviously, they're on stage now as the one big financial institution in Switzerland, but then they've also got this well-known kind of underperforming business that's a huge chunk of them now. Can you talk a little bit through that? Are they just perpetuating the problem?
Yeah, that's definitely one thing to consider looking at UBS now. The government's doing everything they can to make sure it's a good deal for UBS, and like they're handing them a local bank that is worth 10 or 13 billion plus writing off those bonds to create capital and everything. They're really giving them a good package here. What will offset that is if their capital ratios have to go up too much so that shareholders really can't make a good ROE on it. That's something that'll need to be sorted out over time.
And then do you see, I know right after that, so it was interesting. It was like SVB went down. We had a lot of those that we had First Republic. There seemed to be that hunt going on from investors and from the market generally of finding any underperforming bank, which started to put a lot of pressure on Credit Suisse, put some pressure on Deutsche Bank, put some pressure on banks that have had negative headlines or, you know, underperforming headlines in the past. It didn't really shock us into a recession. So I have two questions for you. One, do you think that the scrutiny on regional banks in the US, which was the big fear right away, has subsided and should be okay? And then two, if it didn't shock us into a recession, do you think it has an opportunity to later, or do you think we're kind of past a lot of the pandemonium that happened earlier this year?
No, I think, I think this is all pretty absurd and most of it shouldn't have happened. But now that it has happened, there will be regulatory follow through. And the regional banks, they do need to start issuing bonds over the next few years so that next time one's in trouble, they can write off the bonds. So that'll take their ROEs down a little bit. The regulators, I mean, for the last decade, politicians have been trying to do favors for the little banks so that they can compete with the JP Morgans of the world. So you got the big banks running core tier one ratios of 11, 12, 13%. And the regionals, seven or eight, a few of them at nine, but most of them are comfortable around eight. They're going to have to take their capital ratios up a little bit. So that'll reduce their ROEs. So you got a few different things weighing on them. They're going to need to be more careful with their liquidity. And smaller banks also, back to these securities portfolio, they didn't have to recognize losses in their available for sale portfolios on their capital ratios where the large banks do. So all these favors that the smaller banks were getting, they're going to cut back on a few of those and narrow the gap, which, it's not going to happen overnight. If there's a 3 or 4 year implementation period, the banks can adjust and don't really need to cut back on lending too much. Again, we're starting from a very strong point here, record revenues, strong capital to start with. So it's, they can handle some changes as long as it doesn't happen too quickly. Of course, the Fed wants a recession to slow to reduce inflation. So it's really more the chicken and the egg conversation. Is it loan demand declining because the economy is slowing down, or are banks tightening up? It's a little bit of both, really. Our base case is we do get a mild recession. And banks pulling back will add to that. But there's plenty of capital for them to continue to grow loans at 4% or something like that as an industry, which will be fine. We don't need 6 or 7% loan growth.
John, you mentioned that the role of hedge funds shorting SVB was a huge reason why the bank collapsed. Do you see that as an ongoing problem? Is there an industry that's built around trying to break banks, or... talk a little bit about the detail, I think, there to dig in would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, hedge fund community is very, very active in their short positions recently. It's been news flow about how the KRE is 90% short. I don't know how that happens. Very active today. It's because a lot of people are going around talking about how I mentioned all the deposits went into these securities when yields were much lower, and they've got all these unrealized losses. That is true, but they're not mentioning the fact that these securities mature over the next few years. And as banks do recognize losses on them as they build up equity through earnings or maybe the odd little capital raise, that you can take that yield on your securities portfolio up dramatically to support earnings. So the short story is pretty easy today. We're going into a weakening economy because that's what the Fed wants. Commercial real estate's all toxic, and they've got these underwater loans and securities. It's easy to paint a negative picture, but that's only half the story, right? They're not talking about how much capital has been built up over the past decade and all that. And it's just sad because it's a real waste. There's a real weight on the global economy or the U.S. economy, especially because banks, you know, they need some faith in the system. Doesn't help when Elizabeth Warren's beating up on them all the time. Hedge funds creating rumors. This could end very badly if they don't control it to some extent with social media. So I think that's more of my concern in trying to figure out how to value a bank than the economy. It's, you know, how do you deal with people trying to promote a run on the banks? It's tough to put that in the valuation.
Is there a lot of people doing that? Are there a lot of funds that are constantly kicking?
It's hard to say, like hard to measure. Mm-hmm. We know, I see some valuations that don't make sense. And you see panic in the stocks. And you see these reported short interests. Sometimes they make sense, sometimes they don't. But unless they put someone in jail for encouraging a bank run to make a buck, it could continue. And some of these banks are at a size where they just can't defend themselves. And the long-only community can't really get out on social media and talk about all the good stuff. It's not a fair fight.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to sell panic for sure. Yeah. Than you know, buy and hold. So I think there's been a lot of fear, speaking of panic, a lot of terror going on, especially in retail investors. It was great to see that depositors were made whole throughout these different crises that happened individually. How do you think when we're thinking about a financial advisor and you've got a client who's really worried about the stability of the banking system, how can they calm them? What should they talk about? What are some of the key points they could give their client to build confidence back into that? Because it's pretty fundamental if you don't believe that the money you have deposited in your bank is safe.
Yeah. Well, the Canadian banking system is very different. Very diversified banks and all that. Not a lot of worry here for anyone. Someday the shorts will come over here and beat up on our banks when house prices are down a lot, which has to happen someday. Don't know when. So that's one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, we've got great banks here, but that hedge fund community can make things pretty crazy when they come back someday. So keep that in mind. As far as your holdings in bank stocks and that, it just shows you got to be diversified. Because things can get nasty. I guess individual banks, you gotta watch out for what can go wrong and make sure the management teams don't put problems off to deal with next year. You gotta deal with them fast. Otherwise, your stock will be beaten up pretty quickly.
Is there any way for advisors to prepare their clients for any unforeseen kind of shocks like what happened in March 23?
Really, it's just diversification. It's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank was similar to a cyber attack or something, right? That's something we've been worried about the last 10 years as well. It hasn't really taken down a bank, but it was that type of hit. And again, that's just argues for some diversification in the portfolios. That's your only defense. They're good businesses, producing good dividends in that, but they're just, and that relative valuation of the market looks attractive and everything else. So they make a good part of the portfolio. And, you know, I think this might be the eighth time in 25 years you see valuations at a point where you can make 50% in 12 months in bank stocks. So this year might be one of those years.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but it's going to be very dicey.
John, we've covered a lot of points today. I'd love to get, you've got a few key points. I'd love to just get you to summarize and get across to our listeners.
Yeah, I think it's been a horrific start to the year. And headlines are going to continue to remain negative because we probably are going into a recession. And all those deposits that the banks built up during 20 and 21, those are going to shrink. Loan to deposit ratio is low relative to history. So that's going to normalize, and we're going to see headlines that deposits are shrinking, but that's fine. It's expected. The banks are starting from a very strong point here. They're pretty resilient capital-wise and everything. So I think there's going to be some good opportunities for the banks to create some shareholder value over time, but it's going to be a dicey year.
John, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next time on The Frontier.